Tell you what, you get a reputation in this job sometimes, don't you?
All right, then. Our next public hearing is change of zone number 1769, Ocean Atlantic Communities, LLC. Mr. Lank, while the applicant's making his way up here, have they made a request to combine this with the next public hearing, which is conditional use for the same applicant on the same site?
I believe the applicant representation is present, and I would ask.
Mr. Fuquay, is it your desire to combine these hearings and have testimony one apply to the other?
Yes, but the commission's okay. We're going to present everything in the first hearing, and that will be the record for the second.
Okay. And for those of you who are not frequent flyers here at Planning and Zoning, what that means is that there are two requests on the agenda. One is for a change of zone, and the other is for a conditional use. The subject of both of these is the same property, and it'll be the same information. What we will allow the applicant to do is to combine them into one public hearing, but we will vote on them as separate items. They will still be voted on as separate items and read into the record as separate items. But we will, for our purposes here, we will combine the hearing. Okay, Mr. Lank, go ahead.
As stated, these two applications will be combined for purpose of public hearing, and the decision, if rendered, will be done individually on each case. First application, I'm going to read both applications together. Change zone number 1769 is the application of Ocean Atlantic Communities, LLC. It's an application to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a MR medium density residential district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, on a parcel containing 36.98 acres, more or less, for land lying north of Route 1 Coastal Highway, being north of Tulip Drive within Dutch Acres subdivision, and being southeast of the railroad near Nassau. The 911 address was not available. The tax map ID is District 335, Map 11, Parcels 55, 56, 59, and 59.01. The conditional use application is number 2012, also from Ocean Atlantic Communities, LLC. It is an application to consider the conditional use of land in a MR medium density residential district for a mixed residential use with multifamily dwellings to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth 100, Sussex County, containing 37.26 acres, more or less, land lying north of Route 1 Coastal Highway, being north of Tulip Drive within Dutch Acres subdivision, and being southeast of the railroad near Nassau. 911 address not available. The tax map ID, again, is District 335, Map 11, Parcel 55, 56, 59, and 59.01. Just for the record, some of you will notice that there was a difference in the acreage. The change of zones for 36.98 acres. The conditional use is for 37.26 acres. Reason being that one of the parcels and referenced in the application for rezoning is, or for the conditional use, is already zoned MR. That's the lot in Dutch Acres that's adjacent to the access. So that's the difference in the square area. The application was filed on November 25th, 2014, and included surveys and site plans. The applicants provided an exhibit booklet on March 16th of 2015, which is an inch and a half thick binder. For consideration, that the exhibit booklet contains a presentation outline, a data column, a history of the project, a copy of ordinance number 1790 for conditional use number 1526, the application of Rubino Sanibel Village LLC for multifamily use of the property that was approved on September 13th of 2005, a copy of the previously approved plan for the multifamily use that never developed, a copy of the proposed rezoning plan, a copy of the proposed conditional use plan, a copy of the revised proposed conditional use plan based on technical advisory committee comments, a series of maps, plans, aerials, and renderings, a copy of the 1868 Beers Atlas map of the area, a copy of the response to the plus comments, plus meeting preliminary land use service with the State Office of Planning Coordination, an environmental assessment and public facilities evaluation report, a letter on source water protection, a response to the Technical Advisory Committee comments, a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers jurisdictional determination letter, a site-specific assessment and brownfield investigation report from Environmental Alliance Incorporated, a letter from DelDOT in reference to the traffic impact study for the project, and a willing and able to serve letter from Tidewater Utilities Incorporated. On March 12th of 2015, the applicants provided additional exhibits, including a Google Earth photo of the site, copies of portions of the Sussex County Comprehensive Land Use Plan relating to the environmentally sensitive developing area and future land use map, copies of portions of the Sussex County Comprehensive Zoning Map, copies of the minutes of the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting of March 2nd, 2004, and April 29 of 2004 relating to the Rubino Sanibel Village LLC application for conditional use number 1526, and a copy of ordinance number 1790 dated September 13 of 2005 referencing the approval of conditional use number 1526 by Sussex County Council. I'm not done yet. Sorry. We also received on March 20th, 2015, Conservation District comments in the form of a memorandum, and they reference that the site contains five soil types, that the applicants will be required to follow recommended erosion and sediment control practices during construction and to maintain vegetation, that no storm flood hazard areas are affected, that it is not likely that the project will necessitate any off-site drainage improvements, that on-site drainage improvements will be required, and that no tax ditches are affected. On March 23rd, 2015, we received comments from the County Engineering Department Utility Planning Division, again in the form of a memorandum, and they reference that this project is located in the West Rehoboth expansion area, that wastewater capacity is available for the project, that Ordinance 38 construction will be required, that the current system connection charge rate is $5,500 per equivalent dwelling unit, that the appropriate connection point is not known at this time, that conformity to the North Coastal Planning Study will be required, that the project proposes a mixed residential development of single-family detached dwellings and duplexes for a total of 147 residential units, that the project is located within the boundaries of the West Rehoboth expansion of the Dewey Beach Sanitary Sewer District, and connection to the sewer system is mandatory, that a potential connection point for the project exists near the northerly end of Tulip Drive, and that the potential point drains to nearby pump station 240, which in turn discharges through a 4-inch force main to manhole near the intersection of Tulip Drive and the northern side of Route 1. The pump station 240 currently lacks capacity to serve the proposed project, and that the developer shall be required to either upgrade the existing pump station or pump around the station to an acceptable connection point. That all work shall be performed at the developer's expense. That based on limited information available at this time, capacity appears adequate in the downstream transmission system, that the county shall require the developer to undertake or fund a capacity evaluation and planning study to determine sewer connection options and upgrades, that the county requires design and construction of the collection and transmission system to meet county sewer standards and specifications, that a new concept plan must be submitted to County Engineering Department for review and approval prior to the design of the sewer system, and that a checklist for preparing concept plans is available. We did receive, that's the agency comments. We did receive some emails from Jeff Green and Barbara Vaughn referencing a traffic management study for the area, an email from Bob Maloney referencing this Georgetown-Lewis rail trail, and that the developer could complete the bordering trail and extend under Route 1 at the Nassau Bridge, and that this would be an awesome improvement to Route 1 pedestrian and cycling safety. We also received an email from Robert Rice in opposition due to the difficulty of getting onto Route 1 in the summer months to go southbound because of traffic, and adding that all year long the St. Jude's Church must have the state police direct church traffic onto Route 1, and suggesting denial due to the limited access from Tulip Drive. We also, for the benefit of the commission, I'm providing those comments now. And they're in the form of emails. I did receive one additional email late this afternoon. If I can find it here. It's addressed to the commission members. It's the last attachment to what I just passed down. And it is if I'll go ahead and read it to the record. Dear commissioners, the following comments are submitted by the undersigned residents of the Village of Five Points, also referred to as VOFP, to the commission for consideration of the public hearing. And let us begin by saying that we do not oppose the proposed rezoning and conditional use ordinances, as they appear to be consistent with surrounding zoning and will result in the remediation of a nearby brownfield site. We would, however, ask that the Planning and Zoning Commission recommend that Council impose several conditions on any approval of the conditional use ordinance that will address issues of particular relevance to nearby residents of the Village of Five Points. The VOFP deserves the same consideration as most of Dutch Acres, and ask that the proposed development provide a 20-foot buffer screen between it and any VOFP boundary it adjoins. The boundary areas of VOFP adjoining the parcels to be developed currently have forested areas and plantings that serve to screen our community, as well as to provide habitat for animals and birds that we, as well as adjacent neighbors, enjoy. We are concerned that remediation and or construction activities will damage or destroy existing plantings and mature trees in these areas, requiring cost replacement. The proposed buffer area can be realized in part by simply leaving undisturbed existing trees and plantings and infilling the areas lacking those with trees or plantings as part of the project. This approach would benefit both the VOFP as well as the proposed development. Two, the preliminary site plan shows a 10-foot wide path alongside the boundary of the proposed development and the Atlantic Concrete Plant. This path appears to serve as a connection to and from the VOFP boundary to a parking area within the proposed development near the future Georgetown Rail with Trail project. We ask that the path be eliminated. We are concerned that it will be used as an entry to the VOFP property and is of no or limited value to residents of the VOFP who can readily access the future Rail with Trail network at Old Orchard Road. In addition to the above conditions, we ask Planning and Zoning to recommend that Council requires a condition of their approval that the developer make a technical determination to ensure that loss of recharge area and or use of any required remediation and or construction dewatering wells will not adversely impact the productivity of the numerous agricultural wells in VOFP and possibly those on other properties as well. And it respectfully submitted, and there are, I'll just say, multiple signatures on the third page that show all the persons that are participating in this letter. And that's all I have. Unless you have any questions.
All right, should we?
Sorry about your time.
Thank you. Before we get started, ladies and gentlemen, as you can see, the applicant has numerous exhibit boards. They do have one directed your way over here, but it's very difficult for you to see from where you're sitting. So please feel free to get up at any time during the hearing and walk over and stand right in front of it and take a look. I just ask that you not have any conversation while you're there. because we're going to be proceeding with the testimony. But by all means, if you want to take a closer look at what's on the boards, feel free to do so. And with that, Mr. Fuquay, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The just in follow-up to the boards, the board here and the board there are identical. So when I'm referring to exhibits, they are the same exhibits. So there's no difference in them. For the record, my name is James Fuquay. I'm an attorney in Delaware. I haven't been a member of the bar as long as Mr. Hackett, but I have been a member of the bar for some time. I am representing the applicant, Ocean Atlantic Communities, LLC. As we've already noted, but I just state for the record that we do have two applications before you, a change of zone from AR to MR, and a conditional use application for multifamily mixed-use dwellings. I'm going to present all of our exhibits and testimony in the first hearing and just incorporate that as the record for the second hearing. With me are Preston Schell and Ben Gordy on behalf of the applicant, and Zach Crouch and DJ Hughes from Davis, Bowen, and Friedel. And I think, as was stated by Mr. Lank, there you should have an exhibit book that was submitted, and then I did submit a second set of exhibits that I'll be referring to in my presentation. And obviously, from the number of people here tonight, there's a lot of interest in this application. I realize there are concerns from some of the nearby residents, as well as some of the parishioners of St. Jude's Church. I hope in our presentation we can address some of those concerns, hopefully answer some of the questions. So if they'll bear with me, we'll begin. These applications involve a 36.98 acre of parcel of land that's located on the north side of Route 1. It's approximately behind St. Jude's, the Apostle Catholic Church property on Route 1, just north of Five Points. The property is located back, as I said, north of the actual Route 1, and it will be accessed to Route 1 by Tulip Drive, which is an existing state-maintained street. The drive will actually be extended onto this property, and that will provide the access to the development. The property is bordered on the south, which would be the bottom of that plot, by Dutch Acres. Dutch Acres is a 40-lot subdivision. On the east, or to the right, the property is bordered by the village of Five Points. As you know, there's a mixed residential development with a commercial or business town center, and that's approved for 586 residential units. To the northeast, or where the white area is, that is the Atlantic Concrete facility, which is a non-conforming commercial industrial type of use. The entire north boundary, which again is the top of the property, is adjacent to the Penn Central Railroad tracks and right-of-way. And then on the west, there's two multifamily developments there, the Reserves of Nassau condominium and Terramino Villas of Lewis condominium. And you can see them separated there, the two developments. There is some history to this site, I think, which is relevant to these applications. And since Mr. Wheatley was the only one on the commission at the time of the original hearings.
I'm the old guy now.
I do want to summarize what those applications were about. In 2005, this same parcel of land was approved as a conditional use for 152 multifamily dwelling units by the Sussex County Council. That applicant was Rubino Sanibel Village, LLC, and I actually represented the applicant in that matter, so I'm very familiar with that application and this site. After our public hearing before the Planning and Zoning Commission, the Planning and Zoning Commission actually recommended denial of the application on a motion made by Mr. Wheatley. And that original application had two very significant differences than the application before you tonight. The first one is that the original application proposed a shared entrance to the development with Atlantic Concrete. So that would be an entrance basically coming from Old Orchard Road and then extending along an access road of approximately 1,000 feet back to the development. And this shared entrance, this is Old Orchard Road here, so this shared entrance would be at the Atlantic Concrete facility, and then it would come down here to the site. Needless to say, Mr. Wheatley did not find that as an attractive entrance. His motion to deny this basically were his concerns over the potential hazard of passenger vehicles coming from this development, coming to this development and from the development, sharing an entrance with large, heavy cement mixing trucks.
Stems from my familiarity with the drivers of large cement mixing trucks.
And as Mr. Wheatley mentioned in that motion, those trucks do enter and exit that site on a regular basis. County Council did approve the conditional use, but they did impose a condition to address the concerns expressed by the Planning and Zoning Commission. And what that condition required was that a private traffic signal on the access road, on the interior of the access road, would be constructed by the developer. And that would stop traffic, go from green to red, whenever any commercial vehicles were entering or leaving the concrete plant site. The minutes of the Planning and Zoning meeting and the County Council meeting are in the smaller packet. Exhibits D and E. Now, the development obviously was never built, and the conditional use expired, but it's clear from the record that the commission objected to the use of the Atlantic Concrete facility shared entrance. And in condition 15, which was the county council condition requiring the signal, the county council also noted that the if the development can obtain other access from another location, then of course that condition was waived. The main point I'm making is that the both the Planning Commission and the County Council recognized that a different access was preferred for safety reasons, and that's certainly understandable. So the first difference in tonight's application, as I stated, is that the entrance to development will be from Route 1 by way of Tulip Drive. Tulip Drive is a state-maintained street, and as I said, that will be extended to the development. In fact, 30 feet of the right-of-way of Tulip Drive is actually part of this property. It's actually owned by the owner of this property, but had been dedicated to public use and is part of the street. So it's an easement on the roadbed, which is actually owned by the property owner, which will be part of the development. Again, it will not affect any public use of the road or anything of that nature. The second significant difference in our application is that the proposed development will be an age-restricted community of 55 years or older. The main characteristics of a age-restricted community is, of course, that there's no school impact because basically there's no children. The only school impact would be the payment of taxes, and the homes are basically designed with the master bedrooms on the first floor, and I think you're familiar with the concept of that. Also, as stated in DelDOT's letter, which I'll be mentioning in a minute, this plan with the age restriction covenant, as compared to what was approved previously, will result in much lower traffic volumes and lessened impacts. Age-restricted communities just have less traffic impact. As to the actual traffic impact, a traffic impact study was done, and the traffic impact study is referred to as a TIS, that was prepared by Davis, Bowen, and Friedel, that was reviewed and approved by DelDOT. DelDOT's approval letter is in tab 9 of the large exhibit book. Again, at the direction of DelDOT, the TIS studied the Route 1 Tulip Drive intersection and the proposed intersection of existing Tulip Drive and where this extension of Tulip Drive would be located. Based on the TIS, DelDOT will require improvements to Route 1 intersection by extending the Delaware Route 1 turning lanes, and then also improvements erecting a stop sign to control the Tulip Drive intersection. As part of the TIS, DelDOT also required what they call a traffic signalization or traffic signal justification study for the Route 1 intersection. Now, DelDOT's report notes that the existing intersection currently has signal equipment, but it operates in yellow flashing mode, except during church services when the signal is manually operated and controlled by the Delaware State Police. And I think that's been occurring for quite some time. The signal justification study that was performed by Davis Bowman and Friedel concluded that traffic volumes at the intersection for both existing and proposed conditions do not meet the necessary warrants for converting the signal to a full stop-and-go mode. In addition, McCormick and Taylor, who are consulting engineers that DelDOT utilized to review plans, they conducted a separate analysis of the signalization question, and they concurred that a fully operational traffic signal is not warranted at this location. So the existing Route 1 Tulip Drive intersection will continue to operate and function in the exact same manner that it does now. It will be a flashing yellow, and it will be manually operated when church services are going on. Now, in addition to the road improvements that would be required, the applicant has offered, as requested by DelDOT, to dedicate a 5-foot-wide easement along the entire length of the Penn Central Railroad right-of-way. And the purpose of that would be for the proposed future Lewis Georgetown pedestrian bike trail. And again, that would run the length of this side of the property. And right in this location here, as shown on the site plan, the applicant has included in the site design a public parking area. And that would be for the users of the trail. And again, that would be available to the public to come in there and park and access the trail from that location, and obviously would provide a safe parking spot for them. Now, as to other aspects of the development, water for domestic use and fire protection will be provided by Tidewater Utilities, Inc., a public water company. Their ability to serve letter is in tab 10 of the large exhibit book. As was stated, the parcel is located in the West Rehoboth expansion area of the Dewey Beach Sanitary Sewer District. A system design assumption of the County Engineering Department for this site is a maximum of 4 units per acre, which is basically the density we're requesting. The county engineer indicates that wastewater capacity is available in the system for the development. The parcel is in the fire protection service area of the Lewis Fire Department. Electricity will be provided by Delmarva Power. From the studies that were done, there are no known endangered or threatened species listed on the federal or state records on the site, nor are there any listed historic or cultural resources. A wetland delineation was performed by Watershed Eco, Inc. They did identify 4.51 acres of federal wetlands on the site, which are located in the front area, right in this area here. That delineation was submitted to and reviewed by the Army Corps of Engineers, and the Army Corps did issue a preliminary jurisdictional determination on February 4th of this year, and that is in tab 7 of the booklet. The development design will conform to the requirements of the Source Water Protection Ordinance, and the stormwater design for the development will be in conformity with the regulations adopted in 2014. As was mentioned, a portion of this site was used in the past as a borrow pit and was backfilled with stumps, and logs, and construction debris. A detailed site evaluation was done by Environmental Alliance, Inc. to determine the nature and extent of any contamination and what remedial measures would be needed to bring the property into compliance with DLDOT standards. The property is enrolled in the state-operated brownfield program, and I think you know that that is a program basically used to bring properties, clean up properties, bring them back into use in a safe manner. Again, this all the remedial actions that will be taken on this site will be completed as determined and as supervised by the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control. Now, as to our application, specifically, we are requesting a rezoning from AR to MR medium density residential and a conditional use for an age-restricted community of 147 condominium units that would be comprised of 43 single-family units, 46 duplex units, and 58 townhouse condominium units. In addition, there would be recreational amenities consisting of a clubhouse, a swimming pool, a playground, and the trail dedication that I mentioned and the trail parking lot that I mentioned. Now, as to the legal basis supporting our application, under the Delaware Strategies for State Policies and Spending, this site is located in an investment level one. To be honest with you, I don't know if I've ever had anything in the investment level one. This is investment level one. The state states that these are areas the state considers to be already developed in an urban or suburban fashion. They're areas where infrastructure exists or is readily available, and it's an area where future redevelopment or infill projects are expected and encouraged by state policies. So basically, under the level one designation, our property is actually located in the area that the state deems most appropriate for development. And we believe that our proposal is fully in compliance with the investment level one designation under the state strategies plan. As to the Sussex County Comprehensive Development Plan, that's in Exhibit B of the small book. Our parcel is in the environmentally sensitive developing area, which, as you know, is one of the growth areas designated in the plan. The plan states that single family, townhouse, and multifamily units are recognized as appropriate by the plan. The environmentally sensitive development area is considered as an overlay area to the underlying zoning district, which in this case we are requesting to be MR medium density. The plan states that central water and sewer are strongly encouraged, and again, as I mentioned, our proposed development will have county sewer and central water. So the parcel's location in a growth zone is important because a proposed change of zone or conditional use must be in conformity with the plan's future land use map. And if you, if you'll move ahead again under Section B, you'll come to the future land use map, which I've blown up of just this area that we're talking about. And our site is the area that's kind of outlined in yellow, approximately. As you can see, that is located in the environmentally sensitive growth area. So with that, it conforms with the future land use map as being in a growth site. But what's more important, if you look at the map, you can see that our site is actually an island that's surrounded by the mixed residential growth area, which is the tan area, and the highway commercial growth area, which is the red area. So it is a growth area surrounded by higher intense growth areas. The next page, Davis, Bowen, and Friedel superimposed our site onto the future land use map. And the future land use map, you know, when you scale it out, they're kind of, they're not precise. So I don't know whether this really is of any great point. But if you do scale it out, though, it appears that a portion of our site is actually in the highway commercial growth area. Probably about, I think maybe about 40 of the proposed units. But regardless of that, it is in the growth area, the environmentally sensitive growth area. So it is in accordance with the comp plan and the future land use map. As to the proposed MR zoning and the conditional use, the proposed 147-unit development is consistent with the purpose of the MR zoning district, which states that its purpose is to provide for medium-density residential development in areas which are or are expected to be generally urban in character and where public sewer and water may or may not be available at the time of construction. Again, our location is at a site in an area that's already urban in character. County sewer is available, public water is available, and the MR zoning is appropriate. The MR zoning is also consistent with the current zoning in the area. If you refer to Exhibit C, Exhibit C again is a blow-up of the zoning map for this area. Again, our site is highlighted in yellow here. And as you can see here, all of the land to the east and the west is zone MR. The land to the front of our site is zone C1. And the only exception to the MR or C1 zoning is the parcel to the rear, which of course is the Atlantic Concrete parcel. That is zoned AR. However, as I mentioned, that is actually a non-conforming commercial industrial use. So the conditional use for a mixture of single family duplex and townhouse condominium units is consistent with much of the development in the area, as well as the zoning in the area. Now, on occasions, there are situations where a change of zone request is referred to as infill zoning. And I would represent to you that this application is a textbook example of infill zoning. And if I can use, I think it's Mr. Robertson's terminology, our piece is the donut hole that is basically surrounded by the MR and C1 donut. The requested MR zoning and conditional use are in conformity with the zoning and the uses surrounding the site, and we believe they are appropriate. So with that, I'm going to turn our presentation over to Zach Crouch to review the site plan.
You like that? Huh?
Good evening. For the record, Zach Crouch, Davis, Bowen, and Friedel, professional engineer in Delaware. 12734, Mr. Wheatley, is my number. As Mr. Fuquay has stated, we're here tonight for two applications. And I'm kind of going to run over the site plan and some of the questions that maybe some of the residents here have to try to address them. As we develop this plan, the property itself will consist of, as stated, 147 mixed use, which 43 are single family, 46 are duplexes, and 58 are townhouses. And these will be age restricted in the condominium regime, so there will be no property lines. And basically, the condominium regime basically goes hand in hand with age restricted. Folks want to live there, they don't want to maintain anything, so that was one of the biggest pushes for the age restricted in the condominium all on this as per this project. As stated, we're having access will be off of Route 1 Fruit Pole Drive. And there again, based on the 2004 conditional use, one of the concerns was access out on through Atlantic Concrete. There again, concrete trucks, as well as there's a crossing there for railroad. Even though the railroad doesn't exist, you still have a crossing there, which was also something that was brought up. Through Tulip Drive, the property will be served and will cross, have two wetlands crossings. As part of the delineation that we received from Army Corps engineer, the two crossings will be permitted through a nationwide permit, which is pretty typical and standard for any wetland crossings or utility crossings. We also are providing a 20-foot buffer, which is in a kind of a light green around the wetlands that have been delineated. And there again, that's a 20-foot volunteer buffer. And in most cases, it's more than 20 feet. But to show where the road is and some of the dwellings, we're keeping that 20-foot buffer throughout the community. The project will also be served with a pool clubhouse, which is centrally located within the site. And just like Mr. Fuquay stated, we're showing a designated area for the Rails and Trails parking lot, and this will be in a permanent easement so the public can utilize, and that would be part of the record plan and also part of any deed restrictions that are imposed on the project itself. The proposed community is also in the booklet that you received, is also an excellent groundwater recharge area. And per chapter 89 of the Sussex County Code, we have to meet certain requirements. And the project itself has 29% impervious area as it stands right now. The purpose of Chapter 89 is to either, you're within the 35%, you have to do other measures, or you're under the 35%, which based on the site layout and also the stormwater management, since we are doing bioretention, we're utilizing that as well as not impervious area. As Mr. Fuquay stated, the existing parcel was an existing bar pit at one time. But you can see we have 26 acres of open space for this project. And there's the areas where the bioretention areas are located are depressions based on the existing bar pit. So there's going to be some reconstruction of those areas, but we're going to utilize them, one, because it's in a excellent recharge area, but two, is because the depressions are already there. But clearing will be to a minimum to utilize the existing mature trees out there that exist. But most of the trees, based on the layout that we have, will be preserved. We are in the West Verhoeven expansion of Dewey Beach Sanitary Sewer District, and in Exhibit 6, the county engineering department did state that there is capacity. We do have to look at either upgrading the pump station at this location here, or finding a means to outfit one. But the transmission line does have capacity for the project presented today. Stormwater management. We will have to meet the new stormwater management regulations. So, which were adopted in 2014, January 2014. So this project will comply with the new stormwater management regs. As far as the environmental report and the summary that was provided in the booklet, Environmental Alliance did a report and performed over 120 borings and test pits to put together that report, and which has been submitted to Denerec, has been reviewed by Denerec, and there is four recommendations or requirements, two recommendations to comply with that. So you're taking a site that's been in the brownfield program, and you're removing some contaminated material from the site, and you're also providing material for the site to cover some of the areas that there was some concern. So based on a report that was approved by Denerec, there is no hazard or health safety issues with what's proposed for this site. As far as the traffic impact study, Mr. Fuqua pretty much covered that, but if there's any specific questions, you can discuss with our traffic engineer, DJ Hughes. And if there's any questions for me, please let me know. Thank you.
All right, sir. Gentlemen, I just want to repeat the what I mentioned earlier, and that is based on the TIS, the Route 1 Tulip intersection is going to remain the way it is now. There'll be no changes there other than the extension of the turning lanes. And again, for everyone's benefit, that's not my opinion. That is the DelDOT TIS review letter. It's part of the record. Anyone can review that. That's their opinion, and they've concluded that that will not change. Based on the information we've provided and the reasons we have presented, we do request your recommendation of approval on our applications. Again, for the MR zoning and the conditional use for 147 residential units, subject to appropriate conditions. I do want to submit to you proposed findings for both the change of zone and the conditional use, and proposed conditions for the conditional use for your consideration, which I'll give to Mr. Lang.
Thank you, sir.
In closing, as I mentioned in our presentation, this same parcel of land was previously approved for conditional use for 152 units. And the only significant changes in our application, I think, are changes for the better. But those changes are a reduction in the number of units to 147 units, the relocation of the entrance from the Atlantic Concrete entrance to Tulip Drive, which addressed the concerns expressed by both the commission and the council in the original application, and then the restriction that the new development will be an age-restricted over 55 community, which by its nature has less impact than a standard development. In approving the original conditional use for the 152 units, the County Council made several findings relative to this specific piece of property, and I think those findings are equally appropriate to our application. So I just want to recite those because I think they are important. On the prior approval, the County Council found that this proposed development is in accordance with the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan, that it was located in a designated development district where future growth is directed, that it would be served by the Sussex County Regional Sewer System, and adequate capacities exist to serve the development, and it will be served by central water provided by Tidewater Utilities, that the development is consistent with the comprehensive plan's housing and community design elements, and that it will provide a range of housing to serve existing and projected housing demands, that the proposed density of 152 units is consistent with the county sewer service availability study for that area, that the plan recognizes that higher residential density is appropriate for sites in the development district in order to preserve the plan's goal of preserving agricultural areas by concentrating development in the development districts, that the site is consistent with the development patterns recognized in the state policies and spending map, and the multifamily housing developments on adjoining properties, that the character of the area is appropriate for the proposed development in that there are existing multifamily residential developments with higher densities located adjacent, including the Terramino, the reserves at Nassau, and the villages of Five Points, that the development will provide substantial economic impact to the county in terms of sewer fees, property taxes, and transfer taxes, that the approved density and design of the development will provide residential housing at an appropriate density, that all entrance and roadway improvements would be in accordance with the requirements of DLDOT, and lastly, that the site has a past history of use as a disposal of waste materials, construction debris area, and that the site will be cleaned up pursuant to the remediation plans approved by DENREC, which will result in significant benefit to the site and the area. As I said, those were the findings of council on this particular piece of property, and I think they're equally appropriate to our applications. With that, I thank you for your consideration. That will conclude our presentation, other than answering any questions you may have. I do have one other thing to present.
For the record, my name is Preston Shell with Ocean Atlantic Communities, LLC. There's been a couple of disclosures that we're going to make to the potential buyers of this project that I just thought were important for you guys to understand. The first one is we're going to inform them that a rail-to-trail is likely to happen along the railway there. We recently had an issue in one of our other communities where the residents forgot that they were informed that a rail-to-trail would, or that a trail would take place near there on their property, and fought DLDOT on it and actually won. So there will be disclosures within their contracts and within their HOA documents that is intended to be a rail-to-trail in the future. The other disclosure we'll have, at the request of Skip Jones, the owner of Atlantic Concrete, he just asked us to take a picture of his sign that he has up on Old Orchard Road and include that in as an addendum to our purchase agreement. So all the people were very familiar with the fact that they're living next to an active concrete plant. He also asked that we recognize that the 5 acres right here that's owned by Atlantic Concrete at some point is intended to be a concrete reclamation area where essentially concrete trucks dump their kind of remaining concrete out, and then eventually they break it up and use it as crusher run underneath streets. He wanted that disclosed as well. I also wanted to put on the record that we're fine adhering to the 2 requests made by the Villages of Five Points, getting rid of that rail or that trail that leads to their property, as well as backing up that road. I think we need to do another 10 feet or so.
I was going to say that too.
Okay, to accommodate the 20 feet that they requested. That's it.
All right, sir, we thank you. And we'll see if anyone on the commission has any questions for you, and we'll start with Mr. Burton.
Great. So to take away one of my questions is that would it be possible to put that 20-foot buffer in that divides both the Villages of Five Points, and then you have it on the Tulip Drive Road?
Yeah, and this obviously just came up very recently, but yes, the 20-foot buffer can be placed along the property line for the Villages of Old Landing. We'll just have to move the road over and move the units over some, but that can be done. Right. And the trail, again, we thought it's not a trail. This was just access to the parking area to get to the trail. We actually thought that was something they might want, but obviously they don't. We realize it would involve them crossing over some of their land, and we can just remove that.
Thank you very much. Let's stay on the trail for just a minute. I think I read in the book it was a 10-foot easement for the trail, but you mentioned 5?
It's 5 they're requesting. Now, the railroad has a fairly wide right-of-way, so that'll be used for the trail, but they wanted an additional 5 feet, so that's what we're dedicating.
Okay. Will there be a division between the trail and the community? Are you planning on a picket fence of some kind? Or
there might be something ornamental, but there's no intent to separate it.
We intentionally directed the homes kind of away from the trail. So if you'll see, most of that property line has a roadway, and then the homes are accessed, and then they're facing kind of away from the trail for that reason.
Okay. Is there a planned 20-foot on that backside as well?
I don't believe so.
The Atlantic Concrete side?
No, the running alongside where the trail is. So it would be
right. You mean internally?
Yes.
There's no buffer. I mean, that'd be like an interior buffer. There's no per se buffer, but obviously they are set back some from that. As you can see, if you're referring to over here?
Yes.
Yeah, as you can see, the road kind of is what meanders along there.
Okay.
Right.
So it'd be rail, trail,
property. Rail, trail, property. Road, Residential units.
House. Yeah, okay. All right. Thank you for that. The let's go to DelDOT, and you mentioned the just the extension of the lanes. Where does that play in?
That would be on Route 1. That would be the
coming
right
down.
Turn lane in going north, and the left turn lane going in going south.
So there it would be a more of a shoulder to get over to. If you're coming south, you can kind of stack them up.
The turn lanes that are there now will just be extended. So they'll hold more cars.
Okay, thank you. Is it true that a 55 and older community draws less traffic? I mean, is that a proven fact?
Yeah, I mean, it's a DelDOT statistic. I mean, maybe DJUs would be more appropriate to address that.
Yeah, I mean, we use ITE, which is Institute of Transportation Engineers, and they have data with a ton of studies for different single-family communities and townhouses that are not age-restricted and that are. And basically, 147 age-restricted generate 666 trips per day. So that's a lot less. It's about half as much as a single-family community would generate.
That's interesting.
I think when teenagers are taken out of the equation, the traffic goes down considerably.
Would there be any way, if this were to be approved, would there be any way to do the construction entrance through the Atlantic Concrete side, just the construction trucks?
So I've talked to Skip Jones about having an emergency entrance. I didn't think to ask him about construction, but I know our concrete trucks will come from over there. That would be preferred because we don't want heavy trucks going over these bridges. They'll damage them. So I just haven't asked him yet, but I don't think he'd have a problem with that. And I think that's a great idea.
Yeah,
because
it's
a much better
construction only and then close it off.
Correct.
On development. The bridges that you mentioned, I went back to that site, and it really drops off hard when you get the end of Tua Drive. And are you planning on bringing any fill in? Is that the how do you plan on handling it? It looks like
the crossings.
Well, the crossings, the development where those five townhomes are. To me, looking at it from the road, it
you
drops
mean in this area right here.
Correct. It yeah. drops
it,
off.
It drops off. It drops off probably 50 feet within the property. So we're keeping the road in and the lots. By the time, you know, you got this ditches that are elevation at five, and right in here, it's an elevation of eight, and then kind of drops off even more. But this is a 12, so it drops off. I mean, we stop the houses right where the drop off really starts to steepen. But there's going to be a little bit of fill in this area, but we're going to bridge these crossings.
And what about on the other side? Would there be any need for fill over there at all?
Yeah, just because this is an existing bar pit. I mean, there's going to be a major, I mean, earth moving, but majority of the material is going to stay on site.
Yep. Okay. So what will those bridges look like? Are they metal bridges, wood bridges? What are they?
To be determined. And we hadn't gotten that far in the design yet. So, I mean, they can be wood bridge. They could be, you know, precast bridges, you know, where they just go from one side to the other side like maybe an elliptical pipe, half of an elliptical pipe and across the area. But they're probably going to be something like a timber bridge or just a, you know, steel frame bridge.
Okay.
There again, the whole purpose of that is to not have that much impact on wetlands. So, I mean, the whole purpose is to bridge them.
Okay. Everybody keeps going back between a borrow pit and a dump site. What was it?
Well, it, as is not uncommon, it originally was a borrow pit
right. That
became a dump site. Once the dirt's removed, people start dumping stuff in those. Now, this is going back probably 50 years or more. But the information I've read is that it was, you know, a lot of stumps and construction materials were put in there.
What about the phasing? How do you plan on phasing this operation?
We're probably going to try to introduce each product type in an initial phase, and really the infrastructure and the extension of utilities will dictate where those phases will begin. But in all likelihood, this will be the first phase of the single-family homes. This will be probably this extension here will be the first phase of the duplexes, and then we'll extend this way for, well, actually probably this building and possibly this section right here, the initial phase of the townhomes.
So your plan is to just go in there and build it? It's not going to be stepping stone?
It's 36 acres, and which I don't want to say it's small, but for us it's relatively small. So phasing for financial reasons, the site work, it might be two phases from an infrastructure standpoint, but no more than that.
One last question. If it's an over 55 community, why do you have a playground? Are they
because the four? I knew you guys. Actually, I heard everybody in the room chuckle when they brought that up. The fourth most requested amenity behind walking trails, clubhouse, fitness center, and outdoor pool in our active adult communities is a tot lot, because they want to know what the grandkids are going to do when they come down to visit. They're scared to death that the grandkids are going to come down and not have anything to do, and the tot lot encourages them that, well, at least we can go out and play on the tot lot. It's odd, but we generally put them in all our active adult communities.
Okay. Thank you. I have no further questions at this time.
All right, sir.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand the 20-foot setbacks from the wetlands, and that's a voluntary, and thank you for that. I just want some clarification, because this keeps coming up with some of the developments, as to what your plan setbacks are on the property lines for the various houses and townhouses. And the reason why I ask that is I know what our code says, but I'm looking at Exhibit H, I guess it's third plot. It talks about up at the top some 20-foot setbacks and some 10-foot setbacks, and just want clarification as to what those setbacks are going to be on those properties.
The only lot lines will be the perimeter of the parcel. There will be no lots.
Okay.
Okay, because this is a true condominium type of development, where everyone will be a member of a condominium association. All the land will be a common element, and the owners will have a percentage interest in that common element. So there are no the normal subdivision or some of the other developments you've seen where there are setbacks from lot lines, or I guess where people are requesting less setback from lot lines. That doesn't apply here. The only requirement for multifamily is, without going into a lot of detail, there's a 160-foot box that's created that you could build in, and within that box, you have to be 40 feet from another box. But within that box, you could have one big building, quite frankly. So there is no, actually are no setbacks required.
So when we talk about how far the building is going to be from the is there a property line or what?
The only property line is that exterior.
Exterior.
Boundary.
So if I have a house that's sitting there facing a street, how far back from the street is that house going to be built?
20 feet.
20 feet. So it will be 20 feet. And what,
Mr. Johnson, you know, there again, there's a reason behind that, just because, you know, you got your parking requirements too.
Right, and that's why I'm asking, because if you look at the, like I said, the PL3 in Section H, it shows, it does show the setback of that. And are we talking about a 10-foot setback between buildings, or are we talking about, so we're talking about 5 and 5, or what are we talking about there?
Well, just for clarification, there's no setbacks. You can talk about building separation if you want.
Building excuse me. Yeah. That's better.
Right.
Yeah. Wrong word.
Yeah. Building right separation. Idea, wrong word, yeah, right.
Right idea.
If, The building separation between the duplexes will be 10 feet, and the single families will be 10 feet.
So we're talking 5 and 5?
Yes.
Is that something we have discretion over when we deal with site plan issues?
Well, honestly, I don't know how much discretion you have, because since it's multifamily, like they talked about, if it's in a 160-foot box, it could be one long building or several buildings separated within that. So that's what the code says. I don't know that there's much discretion, because you'd be deviating from what the code permits.
Well, the discretion is the applicant's, not the commission's, right, at that point. There's really nothing we...
So it's not like the MRRPC where we've been having issues, perhaps I've been having issues with how far apart the buildings are.
That's within RPCs that have lots. We've been talking about the building restriction line in an individual lot, you know, a 50 by 100 lot or whatever it is. Here, there's no lots. It's one big parcel with multifamily structures or condominium-style single-family structures, and not a single lot on there. So internally, there's no setbacks at all.
Okay.
So I know where you're coming from, but it's different than those that we saw at the prior meeting, where those were setbacks on an individual lot with an individual dwelling on it.
Because that was an MRRPC, not an...
Yeah. Set up as a subdivision, basically.
Just set up basically as a subdivision.
Yeah, and this is not...
As I said, I agree. My experience with that is that within that 160-foot box, there are no setback requirements other than the one box has to be 40 feet from the next building or box.
And since this is a condominium, do we not get into setbacks from the adjoining property lines? You know, typically when we're talking about subdivisions, we're talking about that forested buffer.
Perimeter.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to get to that, because I know Mr. Burton asked about it. On when the council adopted the buffer requirements, it primarily dealt with that in subdivision. So if you have a subdivision, you got to do the 20-foot buffer around the whole perimeter of it. It added a provision for multifamily projects in a conditional use and said that council may impose as a condition those buffer requirements around the perimeter. So there's not the mandatory requirement. It could just be conditioned as part of the application if that's the way it's worded, what council chooses to do. So there's discretion on that.
So that might be a recommendation the commission might choose to make.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
Okay. Well, Mr. Johnson, if I could just add, we do have the 20-foot buffer around the south.
Here, and then
we will do it on the village as a 5-point site. Okay. The trail's on the other side, and I don't know what, I don't think there would need to be a buffer there, nor do I think we'd need to be buffered from the Atlantic Concrete property.
Well, and the other piece that you were just running your finger along, I believe, come back. There you go. Thanks, Zach. That piece. There's already a buffer going to be there because of the stream. Is that correct?
Right.
Yep.
And that buffer is like 50 feet or something?
Here?
Yeah.
And there's the 20-foot. You got the wetlands and you got the 20 feet, but as you can tell, there's more than 20 feet along that whole property.
Okay. Or
100.
And just a little bit more on the brownfield and the work that's being done there. As I understand it, there's spoils that are going to be removed from the property. Is that correct?
DNREC is reviewing that, but the essence of the recommendations were that there is some soil that needs to be removed, and then that'll be filled. And then there was an area where apparently some, like, must have been an oil spill or something. There was oil soil that was dumped, and that actually was put right back there, and that's going to be covered with the proposed parking lot for the rails, the trails. Okay. And that's really basically the recommendations.
And wasn't there's concern about the water that was in the...
Yeah, what the concern was that there could be no well water taken for domestic use. And as I mentioned, we were going to have tidewater utilities as far as water. Technically, you can take water for irrigation, but not for domestic use, but there wouldn't be any for domestic use anyway.
So is it safe to say that the work that will be done on the brownfield could improve public safety and health?
Oh, well, it absolutely is going to clean the site up and remove any kind of debris or contaminants.
Mr. Chairman, at this point, I don't have any further questions.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fouquet. Noticed one of the notes on the site plan said that you're researching I guess through a title search, some question of ownership on a small piece of land.
There's a sliver.
Sliver.
There's a sliver back here that, to the best of our knowledge, was actually part of this piece when the railroad went in. So historically, it's always been part of this piece, but the record title may keep it as part of that piece. It's probably been acquired. It's probably met the requirements for acquisition by adverse possession, but only a court can say that. Nobody else can say that. So, and as you can see, it really doesn't come into play with any of the actual houses or anything. It would only be where the trail is extended, mm-hmm. and I think some of the roadway may be adjacent to that. But it doesn't. It's not a large area.
And it would be something that, should it come into play with some sense of the essence of the buffers, you would adapt the plan accordingly. That would be noted.
If you look here, it's a little triangle piece.
I saw it on your big site plan.
It's actually not affecting any of the houses, and if it happens to me, we can reroute the the road, but it's going to be resolved.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. In the submission to proposed findings, you mentioned about the, Mr. Burton picked up on this, the age-restricted community, in your words, a term that is generally interpreted. Is there a general interpretation of that? You heard Mr. Robertson.
I haven't looked at that recently, but I was involved in some of these previously. And the federal government had some guidelines. I don't even remember why, but they had some guidelines about age-restricted communities. So basically, you have to be at least, I think, one spouse has to be over 55. And there's some exceptions to it for obvious reasons. If the people who are living there die, someone's going to inherit that property. So that person can inherit the property, and they have so much time they can stay there, but it has to be kept getting recycled into an age-restricted thing. There's also exceptions where there could be a situation where, you know, because of a family problem, a child needs to live with the grandparents or something of that nature. So, like I said, the federal guidelines are there, but the essence of it is it's kept as a senior-type community.
I understand. Just keeping in mind Mr. Robertson's words of wisdom that he shared with us as to how we operate when he read the rules and regulations of the how we conduct our public hearings. So,
well, and that's part of the reason, and I know your concern, and that's why the federal government's got involved and has some regulations so that it's not an age discrimination issue. They've said this is what you need to do, and these are the guidelines that you must follow, and they'll actually track through the condominium documents very clearly so that it's managed that way.
So we would want something that would be more specific than something that is generally interpreted, correct?
Well, I think in the recommendation...
Or that would be on the onus of the development.
I mean, I think we would deal with it generally, and they would have to deal with it specifically.
I think we would have to comply with the federal law.
Right.
And legally, one thing that's interesting about the federal law is that we can't actually turn away a homeowner until 20% or more of our residents do not meet the qualification for age restriction. So if we have 20% of our residents living there where neither person qualifies as 55 plus, we can't actually legally tell them they can't live there until we hit the 21st percent. Now, in our experience, when you market a project as active adult, you generally don't get families moving in or people that don't meet the qualifications. But if someone wanted to live there that was 23 years old and single, until 20% of my residents or more were actually under 55, I couldn't legally turn that person away, and that's part of the federal law, which is odd, but it's like I said, our experience is we don't have a single resident in our other active adult communities that doesn't meet the 55-plus qualification.
Yeah, I didn't want to spend a lot of time on that, but I did want to, for the purposes of the record, to at least bring that up and acknowledge that, gentlemen. And Mr. Shell, if a tot lot is number 4 on the list of requests, where's a dog park?
Well, that's good. That's moving up there. We just found a spot at the peninsula to put a dog park. It was hard to find one where it wasn't going to upset at least somebody. But dog parks are are being requested more and more. And we probably, I know we're not showing one on the site plan here right now, but I would be surprised if we didn't find a location for a dog park in this project as well.
Mm-hmm. If you're going to be keeping all these mature trees, I'd be thinking you'd be attracting dogs too.
Mr. Smith, I agree. From what I've seen in other places, not only do the dogs like the dog parks, but the masters like it even better because it's a socializing place.
Indeed, brings a real nice component. And do you envision this community as being one during its sale period as fostering the sprouting of these signs that seem to sprout at Friday nights and then disappear on Sunday nights, the incredible weekend signs?
You're referring to the illegal signs?
They're illegal on the weekends.
Mr. Lank?
Bandits. They call them bandit signs.
Bandit signs.
Outlaw signs.
Yeah.
No.
You don't have to respond. I was just throwing that out there.
I'm going to punt on that one. And
I think that was a largely rhetorical question.
Yeah, that's all for me for now. Thank you.
Okay. Always a pleasure, Mr. Smith. Okay, Mr. Ross.
Yeah, how do you follow that? I'm trying to read my chicken scratch that I wrote about an hour ago. The brownfield, is Denrick requiring any remedial action today? Or?
Yeah, what Zach had mentioned, that this report was done, the report's like 50 pages long, and with the exhibits, it's like 1,400 pages long. DelDOT reviewed that. They came back with some requested revisions and some recommendations. That's being done and resubmitted to them. When that's finalized, that's what will be done. In other words, it will be much like a traffic impact study. The developer has it done, submitted to DelDOT, they review it, and they come up with the required improvements.
So you have your remedial action plan, it will be in place or very shortly. And so the only thing would be is if you hit something not covered in there, and then you have to report it and redo, right?
Correct.
The parking spots for the rail to trail, how many do you have there?
I believe there's 25.
And then I know you mentioned that you're going to make some improvements in the turn lanes there off Route 1. Are there any other contributions, area-wide study contributions, or anything else to DelDOT that you have to make?
We do not. At one point, DelDOT asked for a contribution to a potential future traffic light, but we found other evidence that they were informing the public that they would never put a fully functioning traffic light there. We brought that to their attention. DJ did, and they said, good point. We don't need that contribution.
I've run into that where one section of DelDOT didn't know what the other section was doing before. Did you consider doing an AR cluster instead of asking for the MR zoning?
Not really, mainly because we wanted to offer the different product types. We wanted to offer different cost, price levels. And so our townhomes will be the least expensive, the duplexes one step up, and then the single family homes one step from that. So we just thought it was more creative, could cater to a larger, it's always the active adult demographic or the age-restricted demographic, but a larger spectrum of affordability if we offer different product types.
And Mr. Ross, I would add that, obviously every application's its own application, has its own facts, but in this particular application, with this site being, number one, doing the remedial work to fix up the pit, with it being in an investment level one, with it being in an environmentally sensitive growth area surrounded by commercial and the mixed residential growth area, and basically being AR1 in the middle of the donut with MR and commercial all around us, if ever there's a spot that would be justified to have a higher density, we thought this was it.
But within the AR cluster, you can get that density. I mean, you can get up to four in the AR cluster. I refer you to chapter 115, 25B3 and F9, which allow you to purchase that density up and get to the four units. So you can get the density in the AR.
They would be single-family lots, though.
That's restricted. You can't do multifamily.
Well, there's a multifamily bonus density trade that they could consider.
And that's, yeah, that's what I read into it as well. I mean, you could achieve this with the multifamily and the AR by using that caveat in ordinance. And so, you know, I don't disagree necessarily with your logic, Mr. Fuqua, that it is a donut hole, but it brings the question, you know, why in our last comprehensive plan did not that donut hole get filled then, you know, by council in reviewing the comprehensive plan, and why should we fill that donut hole now via a zoning change, when you can actually accomplish the density and the multifamily housing using what's in code today in the AR zone?
Well, I don't think in the AR zone it would be single-family lots, so you couldn't get this much density. And if you want to, I'll get philosophical with you for a minute. There's two ways you can increase density. One is bonus density. And quite frankly, that is an economic transaction. I have a certain piece of land. It's like buying beer. I give you money at the liquor store, they give me beer. I give the county money, I get density. It's a pure economic transaction. It has nothing to do with the merits, the appropriateness, or anything else. You just buy the density. The other thing is a land use decision. And that is where, based on the state strategies, based on the comp plan, based on the zoning ordinance, you actually, we have a burden of saying this is an appropriate place for what we're requesting. And as I said, I mean, to me, this is the classic situation. If there's any place appropriate for this, this is that location. So I guess to answer your question, no, we chose to go the change of zone and conditional use.
Yeah, certainly you're right to do that. But I also don't know that I agree that it's just simply a financial transaction. It does allow that opportunity to do what it is that you want to do without a zoning change request. And it makes me wonder that if we were to simply say, okay, it is a financial transaction, then it becomes, shall we approve your request and give you something for nothing that otherwise in code you wouldn't get for nothing? That's all my questions, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir. Ms. Cornwell.
Actually, I have one question. You said your number one amenity is walking paths. However, the sidewalk ends once you get into the development.
We determined that the accommodation of the rail to trail, I mean, that's all the residents will get extremely excited about the extent to that's a walking or jogging trail. And so we opted to accommodate it to the greatest extent possible and provide even a parking lot for the public to utilize it as well. It running trails kind of in people's backyards, it always looks like an afterthought, and it generally isn't what the homeowners envision when they say walking trails, jogging trails, but a rail to trail is exactly what they envision, particularly if it has access into downtown Lewis or somewhere else along the trail.
I was just thinking more of an extension of the sidewalk connection throughout the subdivision or the development.
Sidewalks, considering the extent of our driveways and other kind of obstructions to a sidewalk, we didn't think would be the greatest opportunity for pedestrian and kind of walking. We want to encourage people to actually utilize what will eventually hopefully be a rail to trail than walking past everybody's driveways and whatnot.
Okay.
Walking the street instead.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Lang.
Just clarification, your typical sections on your, I think, page PL3 of the single duplex and townhouses show that you're proposing curving gutted streets at a 30-foot width between the curbs? Your typical sections show 30-foot street pavement with curb and gutter.
Curb and gutter, yes.
Yeah. So you're saying that the residents would be able to walk within that paved section rather than have sidewalks.
Yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure. Thank you.
Anything else, sir?
Well,
got it? Okay. Grab it.
No questions.
Council.
Just two things. Just to follow up on Mr. Ross's line of questioning, it would still require conditional use to go. You could do the conditional use in AR, get the multifamily, and do the multifamily bonus density trade, but you would need an additional approval beyond just the AR. You wouldn't necessarily need the MR, but you would need the conditional use, just since that came up. For the record, I want to make sure something's clear on here. Mr. Fuqua, when you were pointing at the map and the areas where there were going to be the 20-foot buffer, I think you said that there was not going to be one, excuse me, along Atlantic Concrete, but then just so we're clear, I think you also said that path was going to be eliminated. Just so the commission knows where there's a buffer, is there a buffer where the path was?
Well, there's going to be a formal buffer along the residential developments that would be landscaped. Back there, I think you can see from the plot that that walkway is going to be removed, and there's more than a 20-foot area there.
I can't see it from here, but is it wooded along there kind of now?
Yeah, back in.
It's kind of scrub wooded, if that makes sense.
This will just remain open space back here.
Okay.
And probably will be landscaped too, just for.
Well, you'd sort of said that you didn't say that there was going to be a buffer there, and it just.
Well, it's not a residential buffer because it's a commercial industrial property.
Honestly, getting rid of that trail, we'll probably put a berm there
and
a landscape buffer on top of it.
Okay. Yeah, just I wanted to get that consistent in the record. That's all I have. Thanks.
Okay. All right, then, gentlemen, if you'll take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anyone here that has an interest in your application. Is there anyone here?